Just by way of explanation, our reading from Hebrews, though it fits very nicely where it is, verses 14 to 16 are actually at the end of chapter 4, not in chapter 5. So they would have preceded those verses beginning in 5:1, where we started, but they fit very nicely as a conclusion as well to what we heard in that first chapter. But in the logic of the development of the book of Hebrews, the writer or the sermonator first introduces Jesus' priesthood, then talks about what earthly priests are like, and then returns back to Jesus, setting up this idea of Jesus ordained a priest after the order of Melchizedek, which is a central part of an argument going up into chapter 10. And like I said last week, I would encourage you to read Hebrews. It's one piece. Everything you're reading and hearing in Hebrews is part of a longer development, more so than other books. The book of Hebrews reads like a sermon, and you need to sort of track your way through in order to be able to contextualize and benefit, I think, from the reading. So, a lovely conclusion to Jesus' perfection as the Son and his suitability as our high priest. But that was the opening of this development, not a concluding piece of this small piece that we have in a very large argument about how Jesus' priesthood is superior to what existed in the Old Covenant, the priesthood under Aaron and his descendants. Right then. So that's by way of explanation. One or two of you may have figured that out. You're like, wait, no, I'm sure that's not in Hebrews 5. And so I wanted to scratch that itch for you. There's just really some lovely, troubling, of course, deeply sorrowful, but very beautiful images and ideas in our lectionary today. And they really do all three, I think, complement each other in a way that's important for us to listen to. This passage in Isaiah, and I've mentioned before that these passages in Isaiah, there's four of them, I think, maybe five. They're called the Suffering Servant songs or Suffering Servant passages, where Isaiah talks like he does here about in a first person, or talking about a person who's suffering on behalf of others. And the church, early church, said, here's the thing that Jesus was talking about. You may remember that Jesus said, it needed to happen the way the prophets said and the scriptures said, that I must die, suffer, and then be raised to glory. And this is one of those pieces in the Old Testament, the Jewish scriptures, that the church said, that makes sense, right? And so I want to invite you, and maybe I'll remember at the end of the sermon to re-invite you. I want to invite you to spend some time with Isaiah 53. There's something that you may not have encountered or experienced before. If you set aside some time, so clear your schedule, clear your room or wherever you're going to sit, make sure there's no distractions, don't have your cell phone sitting there, and then just say, God, I just want to be open and sensitive to you, and I want to know more about this wonderful gift of salvation in Jesus Christ. And then just read slowly and luxuriantly through Isaiah 53. We started in verse 4. Verse 1, 2, and 3 are great too. I mean, it's just, I had pity on you guys because I already added readings, verses to the other two readings. But you just listen, and there's some really tremendous things that are going on here. But the first thing is that the writer to the Hebrews says, he was wounded for my transgressions, or whatever. And we thought, now this guy's obviously off track, and God's judging him. Isn't that interesting? God is working in Jesus to do something central for my healing and my well-being. And what I say when I observe it is, obviously, God is judging this person. Obviously, they can't be right. Obviously, what's happening here is evidence of God's disfavor. So the first thing, the reason why we might want to sit with Isaiah 53 and listen to it is because we realize that like these initial listeners, the initial audience of Isaiah, our tendency is to miss what God is doing. I don't think that has changed over the last 3,000 years. We can still miss what God is doing. We can look at something, a situation, and we can say, obviously God did not want that or mean that. That is not something I can accept from God's hand. Therefore, I must do X, Y, Z in response. But it may be that that precise thing, that person, that event, that experience, that circumstance might be the precise opening in your life to God's deepening work. Now, we'll return to that idea because that's central to this ending of this initial portrayal of Jesus as high priest, that Jesus himself learned obedience, was made perfect through his suffering. It's a proverb in Greek, right? Mathane and pathane, because they rhyme, sort of. Learning through suffering, it's a proverb. We all know the truth of that. It sounds better in Greek because of the rhyme. And this writer to the Hebrews says that was true for Jesus as well. So that's one reason why we sit with this. But the other reason is that it's, I don't know, so how to phrase this. So maybe it'd been an opportunity where you know, like it's a really close friend, maybe it's a relationship with a spouse, maybe it's a relationship with a parent or a child, and you're like, I really feel like we could enter into a greater intimacy here, a deeper understanding of each other, that our love could grow, but I don't know how to get there. I feel like we just don't do that. Like it's the what if, right? You walk away saying, that could have been really great, but, you know. Right? Think about Thanksgiving dinner, family comes, then they leave. You're like, that could have been great, but, you know, I don't know, maybe you don't live with that. Maybe it's just, you know, people like myself would torture ourselves with these sorts of things and ideas. But I feel that way about encountering God, about hearing this word. Like, really? Did you hear this? He was pierced through for my sin. He was wounded so that I might be healed. What the heck? Like, what does that really mean? Like, do I know what that means? Have I allowed my heart to be open to that? Or do I just kind of like, that's way too messy. That's, you know, like, Jesus, you sound needy. I don't know what. We almost automatically react to these sorts of invitations of emotional depth and intimacy. We're not comfortable there. Okay, maybe it's just guys. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I sense this. And so to sit with it and to say, well, no, let me listen again. No, I know you were just off chasing rabbits again. Let me listen again. Wait, what did that say? He was wounded for my healing? Wounded. I know what that means, right? He was wounded. You see that? Offered himself. Broken, betrayed, forsaken, betrayed by his closest friends. On the cross, his father leaves him. God the Father, who he had always lived in a conscious and awareness, intimacy and connection. And he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? For me. That happened for me. Now, that doesn't make any sense at all. I better close the book and go do something that makes sense, right? Like, I need to change oil in my car. That makes sense. This does not make sense. So anyway, that's my invitation. Sit with it. You may discover something that you are surprised by. That, like we heard last week, the Word of God is alive and vital and powerful, dynamic, to just penetrate soul and spirit, joint and marrow. You may discover something, you may surprise yourself, or you may not, but you haven't wasted that much time. Hasn't been, you know, completely wrong. not like watching a Flames hockey game or something like that. Like, now that's a waste of time. Anyway. So, the writer to the Isaiah has set up this whole understanding of Jesus that Jesus reiterates with his disciples. And here's where it gets personal. Not just that we miss what God is doing, which the disciples did. Now, Mark gives us three times when Jesus stops and says to his disciples, listen, you have to understand this. The Son of Man, he's referring to himself, is going to be betrayed. He's going to die. This is the most elaborate. It's the last time. He's right on the doorstep of Jerusalem. This is the whole introduction into the Passion of Christ, the last days of Christ. And he gives this very elaborate descriptive about what's going to happen. Arrested, handed over to the Gentiles, flogged, beaten, dead, resurrected. And immediately, did you get this? Before I get there. Mark follows this pattern every time. He says, here's what happens. Jesus talks about what's coming, about his own resurrection. The disciples don't get it. They manifest that by what they say or do. And then Jesus points to some miraculous event. In this case, we didn't read it. It's the healing of Bartimaeus, the blind man. And Mark gives us these three in sequence to let us know how we enter the story, right? How do we enter the story? We enter the story where the disciples are. We hear what Jesus is saying and we realize, I don't really understand. Or perhaps I don't want this to be true. I don't want the responsibility of knowing that you died for me. I do not want to carry that. Go die for someone else. And the disciples, in this case, it's this staggering. I mean, if it weren't so heartbreaking, it would be brilliant, right? Like, did you hear this? Jesus says, I'm going to die. I'm going to be crucified, handed over, beaten. And James and John say, oh, well, that's really nice, Jesus. Thanks for sharing. Listen, James and I, we were wondering, could, you know, we just sit on your right hand and your left hand? Like, isn't that beautiful? I mean, that's brilliant. I'm going to die, I'm going to suffer. Yeah, Jesus, about that kingdom, can I have a big slice of the pie? And Mark puts this here because he says, pay attention, children. That's you. What, really? James and John are the only ones who have this egotistical streak? Who come to almost every situation asking, what's in it for me? What's to my advantage here, Jesus? We come here to the altar to receive. Wounded, broken for my healing. But how can I turn this to my advantage, Jesus? What's in this for me? Well, maybe, of course, we're never that bold or crass in our self-seeking. Maybe we just missed it and we aren't that arrogant. But Mark says that's where you enter the story. If you're going to enter the story, you enter right here. You say, I too, Jesus, have just begun to understand what this means. I'm just scratching the surface on what's at stake here, what's really going on. I too, Jesus, look around and I wonder how well I'm doing. And my thought is about me and my comfort, my advantage, my advance. And Jesus said, I came to serve and to offer my life as a ransom, the purchase price for many. And so the writer to the Hebrews, who's writing to a group of Christians who are under persecution, and some of them, they are Jewish Christians, some of them have gone back to the old traditional way to avoid the persecution, the old traditional way of understanding God, the Old Testament way, the law of Moses. And the writer to the Hebrews is saying, if you just understand what happened in Jesus and where he now sits in the heavens as our high priest, one who understands exactly what we've gone through. He can identify with us, and he's opened the way so that you and I can come right into the very throne room of God, so that we can find mercy, grace, which will be a timely help in our time of need. If you can understand this, what has actually really happened, then you're not going to fall away. You're going to persevere. Because even Jesus learned through suffering. And this is where there's an invitation here. So there's two things from Hebrews. First of all, this glorious picture, which I've just related. And again, this is a meditation. You can spend an afternoon just thinking about this. Jesus sits enthroned in heavens, and he's thrown open the gates. Like, picture, you know, the big fortress or the big glorious structure. And the gates are wide open. And they're big gates. Like, big, big gates. So that 80,000 people can walk through shoulder to shoulder. It's a big opening. It's opened for you and I. There's no excuses. There's no limitations. There's no barriers anymore. Except for my unbelief. My obstinacy. My choice to disbelieve. But the gates are wide open. And right there is God. And Jesus is saying, yeah, come on in. He's right there. Ask. What do you need? Come on. And again, 80,000, 80 million can come right there and get one-on-one attention from God. Now, that's the weird thing about God. So, like, don't limit this from your human perspective. You have direct access to God. Do you take advantage of it? Probably not. You have direct access to God. There's nothing barring from God's side. The barriers are on your end. There's any number of barriers. Disbelief is the big one. God doesn't care. This is too trivial. I'm bad. I'm wrong. I'm bent. I'm broken. I'm not going to see God. All of these things keep us out. The way is open. This lovely picture. And then the writer to the Hebrews encourages us with Jesus' own example to not miss what God is doing right now, because he says, suffering is your invitation into the transformation of God's work and life, just like it was for Jesus. Jesus, though he was a son, learned obedience, was made perfect, that is, he was brought to completeness through what he suffered. What were those sufferings? Well, a life of service, a night in the garden, a day on the cross. Jesus is learning what it costs to obey. He's learning what obedience looks like when it runs directly counter to your own will. Remember his prayer in the garden? If there's any other way, God. If there's any other way. But not my will, but thine be done. That's what obedience looks like. That's what love looks like. If you love somebody because it coincides with your own interests and your own desires, you're not loving them, you're loving yourself. You know you love somebody when it's counter to what you would intend and choose and purpose, and yet you still continue to be gracious. And we're not talking here about warm, fuzzy feelings for the most part. We're talking about choices. So Jesus learns obedience, and he's made complete in this suffering, complete as our sacrifice, complete as our high priest, complete in his vocation to live fully upon God so that he might identify with you and I. Because if it was easy for Jesus, there's little comfort for you and I to really think that he can help us. But because it was hard for Jesus, and because he persevered. And so the writer of the Hebrews says, having been made perfect, he now offers an eternal salvation for those who obey him. This is the crux of the matter, where the rubber hits the road. We choose to, like Jesus, persevere in the face of discomfort and suffering. That doesn't keep us from God. We, with loud cries and prayers, with tears, offer up our prayers and our supplications. And we receive what was won for us, and we opened our lives up to this work of God in Christ, because we too have accepted that the suffering, the disappointment, the painful circumstances of our life can be for us, just as they were for Jesus, the path to completeness and to glory, to salvation. That's a big ask, right? So, practically, I think, we're probably better ending where I started. And that is, recognize that God is calling you to something greater and deeper, and that his purpose and intent is to see that happen so you can trust him with the process. You don't need to make it work. But what you can do is sit with the love letter that he's given you, Isaiah 53. What you can do is between now and our gathering at the table, say to yourself, I don't want to just bounce off the surface today, and God, keep me from the arrogance and the presumption and the self-engrossment that has me come with some agenda of my own. Open me to your work. He was wounded for my healing. That's what I want to receive today. Nothing else. So there's two things for you. Both are asking or seeking that you and Jesus get together and a little spark happens, that you rekindle the fire, that you kind of make that connection. Because if you're living a life without that spark, then you're missing out. Jesus has opened the doors on his end. Take the opportunity today to, you know, just squeak it open a titch, you know? It doesn't have to be open terribly wide to begin with. Let a crack open in your own heart, your own mind, your own spirit. And then choose to meditate, to dwell on this, asking God to teach you so that you're not like these disciples, missing the point. So you're not like the early audience of Isaiah, missing what God is doing. In fact, calling it the opposite of what's happening. But so that you're in this very rich, but also rare place where you're open to the work of God in Jesus Christ. Well, may that be so among us. Amen.